Don't move. You're listening to Harpy Hour.
We just want to share another awesome podcast with you first.
So check these guys out and stay tuned for this week's episode of Harpy Hour.
Are you a podcast fan and you're looking for a new audio drama to get into? Check out A Journey Beyond the Skies. A Journey Beyond the Skies is a sci-fi series told through the narrated journal entries of Declan Wolfe. Join Declan as he embarks on a journey that will take him everywhere from a cyberpunk city through dangerous wastelands and even beyond Earth itself. There's even a Patreon page featuring expansive bonus content like pages from Declan's own journal, which include his notes and sketches about the world around him. The podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other podcast platforms. For more information, visit journeybeyondtheskies.com.
Harpy Hour may contain explicit language, as well as graphic, violent, and sexual content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Harpy Hour,
the harpiest of all the hours.
Aloha.
Laid back.
We did it. We've successfully merged into one person.
We Freaky Friday'd that shit.
A three-way Freaky Friday.
I'm basically Steph now, and Steph is me.
Mm-hmm. And I am Liz.
Well, Liz also took my role with the laid back, but I was never particularly good at it anyway.
I'm Tracy.
I am Steph.
We are the Harpies, and this is our podcast where we share ridiculous stories in history, science, and entertainment.
Yep, that's what we do.
I was told there is no time for banter today.
Steph said she couldn't do anything else at the beginning of this episode because she's got shit to say.
I've got things to talk about.
No foreplay, just stick it in.
No, sometimes you got to skip the foreplay and just go for
it. Just stick it in. Just go.
Yeah, well, someone prompt me to stick it in.
So, Steph. Steph. Yes. Give it to me. What's it going to be?
No, queen.
No.
I did not have time to think of a title, and that's the best I came up with.
Does it have anything to do with an actual royalty?
No.
Okay.
Does it have to do with drag queens?
I wish, but no.
Oh. Then I'm out of guesses. That's everything. We gotta go.
Those are the only queens that we know.
I think we're just gonna have to find out the hard way.
No, wait, I got it. Bees? I got it.
Yes. Queen bees?
Not queen bees.
Oh, hi.
Queen Latifah.
Ooh.
No.
Okay. All right. I'm out of guesses. No. All right, yeah. No banter. Just move.
But we'll find out the hard way.
I hate it.
I think it's the easy way. So if someone were to be described as a welfare queen, what is that stereotype to you guys?
The stereotype is like somebody who just like lives off of food stamps, but like
no, but like is, purposely has children in order to gain subsidizing from the government, usually a woman of color.
I think they have that stereotype as a character in the television series Glow about the female wrestlers that has like Alison Brie in it.
I haven't seen it, but I'd be willing to believe that.
Yeah, they have like they do the like, I think it's the 70s. It's like a few decades ago. Maybe it was the 80s. Not that that should make it any better, but like they all like all of the wrestling characters are different stereotypes or tropes.
Oh.
And so like the two most famous ones are Lady Liberty, and so she's like, you know, the American woman, and she always wrestles the
The welfare queen.
Like, no, she wrestles the Russian woman, like this woman who's like a Russian czar character. But there's like a group that does like the even like more racist tropes. Like there's the welfare queen and there's kind of like an indigenous person trope, I think. Hmm. And like an Israeli terrorist trope.
Wow.
And they do like the three of them usually do like wrestling things together.
Sounds kind of fucked up.
Yeah, the show itself is like not meant to be racist. It's highlighting these like horrible characters that are featured in like
right, it's
wrestling.
Making fun of it.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I think one of them is the welfare queen. And that's part of like one of her storylines is like why like she doesn't want to be the welfare queen anymore. And she's like, what? And like, I think she meets her kids again and they're like, this is what you're doing for wrestling. Like you're portraying a welfare queen. Like, are you proud of that?
Mm-hmm.
Like and all that. But that's the context I know it as.
So you guys kind of pretty much nailed it. I mean, it's the usually woman of color, poor, multiple kids, mm-hmm. you know, has a lot of money, but still living off food stamps somehow. And did you know, though, that that term actually goes back to a specific person?
I did not, but I would like to hear about it.
Yes. And that woman was Linda Taylor. That is the main name I will be giving her during this segment.
Is that a pseudonym?
So before Linda Taylor went by Linda Taylor mm-hmm. or any other name, she was Martha Miller.
Okay.
She was born in 1925 or maybe 1926 or possibly 1927.
We're not
sure. As you will okay. soon learn, it is hard to pin down any exact details.
We don't have the birth certificate.
We do. But we'll get to that. The exact details about anything in this woman's life are like impossible to pin down. Her parents and her siblings were white. Martha had dark skin and dark hair. One of the neighbors said, I think she could have been black. A cousin claims that her skin color was due to Native American heritage in the family.
Okay.
And others, of course, speculate that maybe she just didn't have the same dad as her siblings did.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Officially, she was white. Like, on paper, she would mark herself as white.
Okay.
In the census and stuff. But she learned that she could be black when it was convenient, which I can't imagine when that would be because we're talking about the early 1900s, but
yeah, that sounds super not convenient.
Super not convenient at that time. By the mid-1950s, Martha had four children with different fathers. Clifford and Johnny were white. Paul had darker skin than Martha did. And Sandra was kind of more ambiguous, just like Martha herself. And the family moved around a lot. And of course, wherever they went, they were met with racism for being a, quote, mixed race family in the mid-1900s. To the point that, like, sometimes when they went to restaurants, like, Paul, the darkest one, was, like, made to eat outside away from his family and other siblings because it was, like, a white-owned restaurant. They're like, no, this one can't come in.
Damn.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah. That's who we used to be. Martha was not a loving mother. She was neglectful. And she even just, like, straight up left Paul, the darker one, with a family in Chicago one day, like just like dropped him off and just never picked him up.
I don't get that.
Just like left him there. It was years before his siblings ever saw him again. She's just like, I don't want this one anymore. Someone else take it. Martha and the rest of the kids finally settled down in an apartment in Chicago as well. So Paul was with a family in Chicago and then she and the other kids settled down in Chicago. It's not like they were far away. She could have taken him back.
Yeah, but didn't want to or have the resources to.
Yeah, I read something where, like, one of her other kids thought that, like, because Paul was darker skinned and therefore, like, the most quote-unquote problematic to her, that's why she
okay
pawned him off on somebody else, which is super fucked. Yeah, she's a horrible woman.
Yeah, I don't love this.
Yeah, you're not gonna love her. Like, from the get-go, you don't love her.
From the get-go?
From the gecko.
Gecko! 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 Have you guys ever heard, this is not an appropriate time to say this, it's like an R. Kelly song where he's like, I can hear you echo, echo, echo. Yes. I can hear your echo. We could totally use the word gecko in that. I can see your gecko, gecko, gecko. I can see your gecko, gecko, gecko. Okay, continue about this horrible thing.
So in Chicago, a man named Lawrence Wakefield came into the picture. Lawrence Wakefield was older than Martha. I had to remember which name she was going by at this time. He was a black policy kingpin, which basically meant he was like running underground gambling. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't like any kind of a romantic relationship between him and Martha. It wasn't like romantic or sexual. They actually referred to each other as like dad and daughter.
I don't like that.
It's unclear like how exactly they met or what their history was, but like she got to Chicago and like somehow they linked up. In Wakefield, he had a hoarding problem, so a lot of the money that he earned with his illegal gambling and stuff, you know, he helped provide for their family, like money, and he also even gave them bodyguards. But before that, they had all been like moving around constantly around the country. So like this was, despite being like linked up with this like illegal gambling guy, this is the first time the family had any kind of stability.
It's like a sugar daddy / security daddy.
Something like that, yeah. Except, again, from what I read, they weren't anything like romantically linked. Yeah. So I don't really know what he gets out of this. Maybe Martha was just so manipulative that she convinced him to like be that person for them. I'm not sure. But on February 18th, 1964, Lawrence Wakefield died from an intracranial hemorrhage, bleeding of the brain.
Okay.
At the age of 60. And as I mentioned, he had had a hoarding problem. So when police went through his house after he passed away, they found money all over the place. Like, oh. It was stuffed in laundry bags, mm-hmm. pillowcases, like crevices in the furniture. Like, they were just finding like piles of money all over the place. And when they got it all together and like tallied it up, it was $763,223.30. I did not calculate how much that was in today's money. I'm sure it's like over $1 million.
So also coins. Not just like...
Yes, 30 cents.
Dollar bills.
We got an exact amount.
The coin jar. Classic coin jar, God. You know?
Probably. The coffee can full of like cash.
At work, we're moving our office. Mm-hmm. Just like to a different part of the building. So I had to go in. The only day that I've been into my office this entire year, I had to go in and pack my stuff. And I found a coffee mug that I kept of change because I used to buy snacks at the store in the building and just like keep the change to buy more snacks. Sure. So I found my change jar.
Snacks on snacks on snacks.
Yeah. The snack bar isn't open right now. So I brought it home and I just have all this change.
Huh.
Hoarding change.
He passed away. He had no will and he had no living relatives.
Oh.
So for some reason, the newspapers printed photos of his giant pile of cash.
Mm-hmm.
Does this belong to anyone?
Yeah, lo and behold, a dozen heirs just come out of the woodwork. Like, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's, I know him. He's my uncle or he's my whatever.
Yeah.
And including a 66-year-old woman whose name was Rose Kennedy, she claimed to be Wakefield's common law wife. And another person that tried to claim the inheritance was Constance Beverly Wakefield Steinberg, a 29-year-old, quote, light-skinned Negro woman with a Jewish surname.
Oh, dear.
Who claimed to be Wakefield's daughter.
Well, she had Wakefield in her...
Spoilers, so was Martha.
Oh.
It was Martha.
I was like, what a coincidence, though. Also had Wakefield in their name.
Mm-hmm. How serendipitous.
Right? Constance's proof included a 1935 birth certificate listing her parents as Lawrence R. Wakefield and Edith L. Jarvis.
Okay.
And she also had a pet bird. Like a pet is called, it's a mina bird.
Okay.
Never heard of this bird before.
Does it poop sand?
No, but it constantly squawked the name Lawrence. I mean, you can't argue with that proof.
That seems undeniable, actually.
Birds don't lie.
Birds aren't real and they don't lie.
When did birds become not real? This is like right around that time. So
yeah, it was right in that
bird.
Time.
Well, I don't know if we can trust this bird.
Hips don't lie either, so I hear.
Mm-hmm. They don't. Constance claims that she grew up in Arkansas and that until recently, she thought that Edith was her grandmother, not her mother. I don't know why she threw that detail in there. She also claimed that Rose Kennedy, the other woman, the common law wife, was trying to kill her.
As you do.
Quote, "The doctor said I swallowed enough strychnine to kill a dozen people, but it didn't kill her."
Yeah, interesting. What doctors? Yeah. Let me see that.
Yeah, I know. Let me see those ER visits. Let's study you for science, please.
Walls.
She also claimed that two white men tried to break into her house. A, quote, swarthy Italian threatened her, and that there had been an attempt to blow up her Cadillac.
Sure.
She's got a Cadillac? Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We'll get to her cars.
Okay.
Well, Wakefield was providing for her. She had a lot of money. She also claimed that her 11-year-old son, John, had been kidnapped, and she was getting threatening phone calls. Side note, turns out John was not kidnapped. He ran away after he and his sister got into a fight and he was found wandering the streets, like, right outside his home.
Okay.
Reflecting back, John had said that he thought this instance was his mother making this claim because she herself couldn't be bothered to look for him and wanted the police to do it for her.
Well, like, a minor who runs away is, that's still a problem.
It sounds like he just, like, stormed out of the house. But anyway, her story started to fall apart. It turns out that Edith Jarvis, who she said was the mother on her birth certificate, wasn't Wakefield's wife, but Wakefield's mother. So that's gross. The birth certificate also was not actually, like, written up on the day that Constance was born, but rather she had gone, like, she had had it drawn up later. So she essentially just, like, went to an OBGYN and Ben's like, "Hey, remember that time you delivered me 29 years ago? Can you, like, sign the certificate? Okay, thanks."
And they did. They were just like, okay.
And he did. Yes.
Same doctor that told her she drank enough strychnine to kill 12 people.
Probably.
What kickbacks is this doctor getting?
I mean, there was some shit about that doctor too, but I just didn't have time to get into it. Constance also then produced two separate wills that up until this point, nobody knew existed. One was from 1943, at which time Lawrence Wakefield physically described his daughter that nobody knew about, including, like, scars and moles on her body, which is a totally normal thing to include in a will.
You don't do that.
Yeah.
"I have this daughter that no one knows about who has a mole on her left cheek and a scar on her right ankle, and she's going to come looking for my money after I die. You should give it to her."
Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
Don't ask questions.
Don't be suspicious.
No notes. The other will she had was from 1962. And in that, it said that Wakefield had $2 million and that all of it should go to his daughter, except for $1, which could go to his, quote, housekeeper, Rose Kennedy, that other woman.
What a snub. Like,
I know. Well, he wrote, allegedly, in this will, he wrote, "She is no good and will try to take everything from my baby."
So.
Yep. But then it got even more ludicrous when a man named Hubert Mooney came to court and claimed that Constance was actually Martha Louise White, his 38-year-old niece, and Martha had spent time in jail in Oakland, California for assaulting a 12-year-old girl, but was arrested under the name Beverly Singleton at the time. Fingerprints records confirmed all of this. Okay. Are you dizzy? Because I'm dizzy.
I'm so confused.
Yeah. So Martha Miller / Constance / Martha White / Beverly / whoever the fuck else she wants to be got 6 months rather in prison at this time for contempt of court, and she ended up getting none of Wakefield's money. So they were like, "You're making this all up.
We see right through you.
And we're holding you in contempt. I don't know who the fuck you are, but you're going to sit in prison for 6 months."
I mean, fair. I'm so confused.
I know. So after Wakefield's death, the gravy train stopped and the family ended up moving around a bunch of times within the predominantly black neighborhood of Southside Chicago. Cliff, the oldest, ended up leaving as a teenager. Johnny got into trouble a lot and was in and out of juvie and later on prison. Paul was still off with some other family and Sandra's just chilling.
Question, is she still white
or presenting as?
I mean,
is she still white at this point, or is she, like,
presenting as white?
She's not like changing her appearance, but like, is she still identifying as white? Like, what's going on?
So we'll get into it later, but she does change her appearance a lot. She has multiple wigs, and she over the course of this entire story that I'm telling you, she represents herself as white, black, Hispanic, Filipino, like anything she can pass as, she does. It just situation to situation, she will change her name, change her appearance, and change her ethnicity and her age.
Okay, great. She's just a chameleon, and I respect that.
Mm-hmm. Don't respect it.
I respect it when she's not doing like nefarious things.
She's got some hustle.
We've just scratched the surface. So at this time, Martha, who now was going by Linda Taylor, which is the name I will give her for the rest of the segment for the most
part,
just for simplicity's sake.
Thank God.
She had a habit of acquiring and then losing children.
I was going to say, it sounds like she has a lot of habits, not good ones.
Yes. Huh. So sometimes she would like take these children and just drop them off with friends or family or casual acquaintances with no word of like when, if ever, she planned on coming back to pick them up. Pretty much is what she did with Paul. In the mid-1960s, Taylor was asked to babysit for a baby named Raymond Termini for a couple of days. Taylor had previously babysat for Raymond's cousin, Anna, so Raymond's mother, whose name was Rose, had no concerns. She was like, oh, this is my, you know, he's babysat. This woman's babysat for, like, his cousin. Like, I know her vaguely. Like, I'm sure she's fine. And she asked Linda Taylor to watch her kid, Raymond. When Rose, who was only 16 at the time, by the way, she was a baby herself, came back to collect Raymond a few days later, he was gone. Rose reached out to Taylor multiple times, like by phone. She was calling her and trying to find her. And Taylor would always be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to return him to you soon. I'm going to return him to you soon. And then just like never did.
That's kidnapping.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Taylor kept changing addresses, too. So like Rose, again, just a baby herself, was like too scared to call the police, didn't really know what to do about this. Like Taylor was wealthy at the time, and Rose is like, I don't know what this woman could do to my family. So like didn't really know what to do about it. It was 2 years before she finally got Raymond back.
Jesus.
Rose got married, and her husband was a gang member in a gang called the Dragons. They reached out to Sandra, Taylor's daughter, who was a teenager at the time, and harassed her until Sandra brought baby Raymond back to them without telling her mother. So they pretty much harassed Taylor's own daughter into bringing the baby back.
So it wasn't even Linda who returned the child.
No, she had no intentions of ever returning the child, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Cool, cool, cool.
Somehow, Taylor ended up later pulling the same stunt on Raymond's cousin, Anna. I am not sure how she got a hold of Anna. I don't know who, like, why they would allow Anna to be babysat by this woman after this had happened.
Yeah, wouldn't the news get out around the family? Like,
yeah, like, don't trust this woman anymore. So I don't know how she got Anna.
Okay.
She renamed Anna Lena Womack because she herself was going by Constance Womack at the time. And Johnny, her own son, ended up stealing Anna back and returning her to her mother. So, like, her own kids bringing children, like, kidnapped children back to their parents.
And, like, how old are they at this
point? Her kids are teenagers at this time. So, like, her teenage children are, like,
this isn't cool. Yeah.
Returning stolen babies back to their families.
Okay. Great.
But when Anna disappeared, Anna, who she had renamed Lena, she reported to the police that her son, Lena, had gone missing.
What?
Yeah, so her stolen baby was stolen back.
Uh-huh.
And she told the cops about it.
Or like retrieved.
She reported her kidnapped kid as kidnapped.
Great.
At which point the cops found out that A, it's not a son, and B, it's not hers, so they were like, no, you don't get that kid back.
Okay.
Find the logic there. The baby that I kidnapped was kidnapped from me. Please bring them back. Thank you.
Yeah.
Possession is 9/10 of the law.
There you go.
Well, she doesn't have possession anymore. So.
But up until so then, it was her.
Doesn't work. When I get mad at my future children, I'm going to ship them to one of you and be like, possession is 9/10 of the law.
I will not sign for that package.
Jeez.
Me either. Return to sender.
Yeah. I have a minor squatter in my house. Authorities.
Yes, they are an infant. They are still terrible.
Linda was also arrested twice in the 60s for, quote, absconding with children, but was never convicted because she returned the children. Like, that's not how that works.
I'm sorry, that's not funny, but like...
That's a very, like, beating around the bush way of saying kidnapping.
Yeah, just call it kidnapping.
Right, like she kidnapped kids and then returned them, and they were like, okay, like, no harm, no foul, we won't charge you. Like, no, she's kidnapping children!
You should be charged! You have stolen a child!
Johnny said that his mother saw children as commodities to be bought and sold. And he notes multiple instances where, like, a child, like an infant or a child, would just, like, appear in their home and then, like, a little while later, mysteriously, unceremoniously, just disappear again. Like, she would just, like, acquire children and then they would just be gone and, like, there'd be, like, no talk about, like, what the fuck that was about.
This is human trafficking?
This is human trafficking. This is 100% human trafficking. On April 18th, 1964, a woman who was dressed as a nurse went to a hospital and kidnapped a newborn baby from its mother's arms.
What?
She had told the mother, like, hey, like, I'm a nurse. I'm going to take this baby to be examined by a doctor. But then she just, like, left the hospital.
She just, like, walked out with the baby?
Yeah, just walked the fuck out with the baby. Yeah. I mean, this is the 60s. Now we have, like, Amber Alerts and shit. But, like, even then, like, she said, like, oh, I'm going to take her to be examined and, like, take him to be examined, you know?
I mean, yeah. Why wouldn't you trust a nurse? Yeah. Say, like,
the baby was never returned, but one of Taylor's ex-husbands, of which she has many, and I cannot possibly get into them because this is already really fucking long.
Okay.
But one of her ex-husbands told the police that one day around this time period, Linda had showed up with a newborn, like... She hadn't been pregnant and just, like, showed up one day and was like, I had this baby. I didn't know I was pregnant, but I had this baby.
That's like, you can't get rid of the kids that you have and then just go collect other kids.
Yes. Well, she got rid of the black one and started collecting white ones, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, then, in that case.
But then she claims that she, like, gave up her parental rights and the baby was placed in a foster family.
So she didn't even keep the baby that she took from somebody else?
No.
Jesus.
She produced a birth certificate for that baby, which was dated 4 months prior to the kidnapped baby. But this birth certificate was written by the same doctor who had written her own delayed birth certificate.
Oh my God, this doctor.
So, like, it means nothing. It has this, like, doctor that she knows who will just willing to write random birth certificates for money, probably.
Like, and that you've survived poisonings.
Yeah.
I think my brain is short-circuiting over this.
I know. That's why. Like, yes.
I just don't understand.
So much. Taylor was known to dress as a nurse around this time period, and she would tell people she was a nurse. Spoiler alert, she was not a nurse.
Hashtag not a nurse.
A man named Samuel Harper, who had been living with Taylor at the time, I don't know why. I don't think it was a husband, but I don't know why he was living with her, but he was. He claimed that on the day of the kidnapping, she left the home in a white nurse's uniform. He also noted that there were several white infants in the home around that time. Just there.
Just there, yeah.
Okay.
Just random babies in the apartment.
These children are not Pokemon. Like, what the fuck?
Johnny, her own kid, later said that he had his own suspicions that his mother was the kidnapper in this instance. That baby was never found, the one that was kidnapped from the hospital. It was never proven that it was Linda. A side note, the parents of that baby later adopted a 2-year-old boy who had been abandoned in a stroller in New Jersey, and they believed that it was their own lost baby, so gave him the same name, which is sad and creepy.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's depressing. I don't like that.
Mm-hmm. On August 8th, 1974... Linda reported that her apartment was robbed and she was missing $14,000 worth of furs, jewelry, and cash.
This feels suspicious.
my apartment was robbed, I'd be like, I'm missing $500.
Yes, exactly. Were you carrying
clothes from Amazon? And
yes, my life savings was in my purse. Please return it to me.
Thank you.
Please and thank you.
A detective came to investigate, and his name was Jack Sherman. And after talking to her, he had a sense of deja vu. And that was when he remembered that 2 years earlier, this same woman claimed that she had been robbed of $10,000 worth of valuables. And he happened to be the detective for both of these cases.
Well, that's just bad luck.
Yeah, right. Linda was now living in a different part of town under a different name and had changed her hair. And he ended up citing her for making a false report. Then Detective Sherman started digging into this woman's history and found that she was getting welfare checks under multiple names and had at least 7 husbands. Like I said, I cannot get into them all.
7?
I had to draw the line somewhere.
Like 7 husbands at one time or consecutively?
Unclear. I think a little of both. I think some
overlap.
Some overlap.
Some overlap.
Yeah. Some had come and gone.
It's hard enough to get a person to marry you and to sustain that marriage. Like, I don't understand.
Not for this woman.
Like, okay.
Sherman brought this case to multiple public and state agencies, but he had a difficult time finding anyone who, like, cared enough to help him out in investigating her. But eventually, the Legislative Advisory Committee on Public Aid agreed to help. This was a body that was put together to stop government waste. So I guess they recognize, like, this is a case of government money being wasted.
Sure.
We'll help you out with this.
Well, not even so much being wasted, but, like, double and triple and quadruple paid, you know?
Right.
Like, you've already helped this woman. Like,
right. 4 days later, on August 12th, 1974, Linda Taylor, under the guise of 35-year-old Linda Shulvia, went to the dentist to get her teeth cleaned, and there she met Lamar Jones, who was working there. They met on a Monday. They got married that Saturday.
You know, when you know, you know.
Just fuck this. Just, no, 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 no.
Teresa's like, I spent a long time recruiting my one husband.
Exactly. This is outrageous.
This is the most egregious of the
well,
story.
Well, some people go for quantity, not quality.
I can abide by the kidnapping and the stealing from the government, but I mean, come on, lady. Come on.
This is Tracy's line. We found it.
It's in the sand, my friend. The very stolen sand.
So they got married on a Saturday. A few weeks later, Linda was arrested because of the charges that Sherwin, the detective, was bringing up against her in regards to fraud.
My only solace in this situation is that you can't plan a nice wedding in less than a week.
Don't think that was her priority.
It's my only solace. Probably had a hand-me-down dress that was gross.
It was probably a courthouse wedding.
Well, if she had a Cadillac, then, you know, she has means to acquire things that are beyond her means.
Furs, jewelry.
She probably wore the same dress she had with her first 7 husbands. Like, get it together. Last year's Prada. What the fuck?
Lamar paid her bond to get her out of jail. And then she promptly fled the state and went on the lam, taking his color TV with her.
No, not the color TV. No.
Back in the days when you had color TV and black and white TV.
Oh.
Lamar said he had some suspicions before Linda was arrested.
Did ya?
He noticed that she had a degree from a university in Haiti under the name Linda Taylor. And remember, he knew her as Linda Shulvia. She had 5 mailboxes in one apartment building and received letters in each one that were addressed to different names.
Okay, that's a red flag.
That means you had to be renting all those 5 units. What?
It's the 70s. Everything is like a dollar. It's fine.
She admitted that he was to him that he was her 8th husband.
Yeah, the name thing doesn't bother me as much because she could have been married before, like, yeah. and that could have been her marriage.
But then why have, like, five different mailboxes?
No, I was following until the five mailboxes. Go
but
ahead.
Also, like, the first names were not all the same.
Oh, yeah, that's not helpful. Yeah. Well, you said that it was Linda Taylor and Linda Shalvia,
but she had a lot of other names. So, well, yeah, she had five different names.
Until he found out about the other first names, I wouldn't have been concerned.
Do you think she could have been like, I collect mail for my neighbors or like my family in the building or something like that?
Maybe.
I mean, clearly she did not think on her feet that quickly. So
the certificate that had like some like Linda Taylor instead, like that could be explained away pretty easily. But the other stuff gets a little suspicious.
Sure.
He also said that he always noticed how like smooth and flawless her skin was. And then they noticed that like one morning he woke up early before her and saw her like in bed next to him and noticed, quote, 1,000 wrinkles on her face.
Don't be a, that's just rude. That's just rude.
And then when she got up, she realized what happened. So she like got up, like fleed into the bathroom, locked herself in there for like an hour and like reemerged with like her flawless, beautiful skin again. So he's like, she's not even like, doesn't even look like the woman that I thought she was.
What's her secret?
Lots of makeup.
What's her skincare secret?
I've heard that like nobody has ever seen Dolly Parton like without her wig. When she did that movie that she wrote 9 to 5 for,
yeah,
like, and the other co-stars would come into her trailer, like she would already be like in her wig and makeup.
Wow.
I mean, that's commitment, man.
So did you guys watch The Marvelous Miss Maisel?
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Wasn't there like a scene in that where like she gets up, she sets her alarm early, goes to the bathroom and does herself all up and then goes back to bed. And then he wakes up a second later and is like, good morning. And she doesn't see her.
Isn't also in Bridesmaids where Kristen Wiig gets up out of bed and like at the beginning scene and she like brushes her teeth and curls her hair and gets back into bed and just lays there waiting for the guy she's hooking up with to wake up. And it's like, oh, hi. Good morning.
Jeez. Yeah, there are like 1,000 media representations of that. Yeah, like
that's a thing.
The putting makeup on before you go, but like before your husband or boyfriend or whoever wakes up.
That's, I don't have time for that.
That's so much effort.
Yeah. So anyway, lots of red flags and just like their few weeks of marriage before she fled the state and left him high and dry. After she fled, Lamar agreed to let the authorities wiretap his phone, which helped them rearrest her on October 9th in Tucson, Arizona, under the name Constance Green. 3 days later, the Chicago Tribune reported that the, quote, welfare queen was being held in a Tucson jail. And this is the first time the term welfare queen was printed.
Okay.
Lamar testified against her in front of a grand jury, and during his during his testimony, he actually met another man who was married to Linda at the same time, but he was married to a woman named Connie, not Linda Shalvia.
Same person, but different name.
But he had been told that husband number 7 was dead, so it's all falling apart.
I mean, I assume that none of these husbands know about the other ones, so...
Probably not, no.
Or know that they are where they are on the timeline, which is concurrently.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's reasonable to be like, oh, I have an ex-husband. Like, oh, okay, fine.
Yeah.
But like, I have a current husband in addition to you is a little less fine.
Yeah, not so much. In late September of that year, Sherwin's investigation had started making headlines. Taylor had been receiving welfare checks and food stamps, but she owned a Cadillac, a Lincoln, and a Chevrolet station wagon. She claimed to own 4 buildings in Southside, and she was in the midst of planning a vacation to Hawaii. She was initially reported to have 3 social security numbers, 27 names, 31 addresses, 25 phone numbers, and 30 wigs.
I mean, she's a real Moira Rose with those wigs over there. Like, yeah. Jesus.
Later, the report was updated that she had as many as 80 names and was receiving at least $150,000 in welfare money.
How do you keep track of it? Like, do you
have a spreadsheet?
How do you know who you are when? You'd have to.
There was no like Microsoft Excel back then.
She has a Rolodex for just her. Like, <I'm> just
I don't know how you keep track of all of that. Like, she must have like slipped up here and there.
I'm kind of impressed. I'm not gonna lie. I'm a little impressed.
You need to have beyond Liz's level of organization to keep this shit straight.
Yeah, without the benefits of technology.
Yeah. Like, my head is spinning. Like, as I was reading, that's why, like, this morning I texted you guys, I'm like, I need to, like, go through my notes again, because I was, like, kind of, like, rearranging something. So I'm like, I'm trying to go in chronological order, but, like, it's just so confusing of when she had what name and what happened in what order, and so many of these things overlap. I'm just, like, doing the best I can.
I mean,
it is bananas.
I know we're supposed to like hate her, but
you gotta respect her a little bit.
I said she has hustle, and I respect that.
Yeah.
Linda, with her ambiguous skin color, like I said before, would pass herself as Black, Spanish, Filipino, or white. She could also give herself any age between the early 20s to the early 50s, and people would believe it.
Wow. Depends on how much makeup, if she's showing her flawless face or her wrinkle face.
Exactly.
I'm fucking getting a picture of this woman. This is bizarre.
Yeah. In 1974, while out on bail and awaiting trial, she became the nanny and the housekeeper for a school teacher named Patricia Parks, who I'm assuming had no idea that any of this was going on. Patricia Parks had three children, a 10-year-old girl and an 8 and a 6-year-old boy. Patricia started getting very sick over the course of less than a year after Taylor started working for her. During this time, Taylor was in charge of the house and the kids because Patricia was essentially bedridden. And like the many other kids that came into her custody, she was pretty much neglectful of them. They would go to bed hungry. There was even one instance where the boys were so hungry that they hid out in a pantry eating dog biscuits, which is so sad.
Yeah.
Less than a year after Taylor started working for her, Patricia died at the age of 37. Supposedly, she left her home to Taylor and had several life insurance policies naming Taylor as the beneficiary. And supposedly, she made Taylor the guardian of her three children.
I mean, that can't be right, right?
No, it's like, not. It's 100% not. And okay. Taylor thankfully did not get any of these things. Like, somehow the courts realized, like, no, this can't be right. I think the kids end up going, like, with their father. Like, why would she give them to the nanny of, like, 4 months then when they have a kid, like, a living father?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Taylor claimed that Patricia had died of cervical cancer, but her autopsy revealed that she had died from intoxication with phenobarbital, methapyrrolene, and salicylate.
Suspicious.
Jesus.
A little bit. When investigators came to the home after Patricia's death, Taylor introduced herself as Linda Malexo, a voodoo doctor. She had voodoo masks and candles and religious statues like all over the Patricia's bedroom. And she apparently told people around this time that she had like gotten spiritual training in Haiti, where she was supposedly from. And she would keep like potions around her house, and she would charge people for like spiritual visits and some shit. So she's just like all kinds of conning people.
A side hustle to her other side hustles. Great.
To all the hustles. They're not side hustles, they're main hustles.
Yeah, she's got lots of sides.
They're just hustling at everything. This point.
Taylor was never prosecuted for the murder. The prosecutor who was involved in her welfare case claims that he was never able to obtain the blood samples from the hospital where Parks had been pronounced dead, so he didn't have enough proof. He also said that his decision to not prosecute at that time didn't mean that police should stop investigating, but it kind of seems like they did. He also said that indicting her for murder would just seem like he was trying to get more publicity for the welfare case, and he didn't want to jeopardize that.
Sure.
She murdered somebody.
Yeah.
And we're worried about, like, the status of her welfare case. Priorities.
Yeah. This is not great.
But that's, like, if that's how you ultimately get them. Like, think of, like, mafia criminals, like, there's a whole bunch of people out there that have murdered a bunch of people, but you get them on the tax fraud. Like, that kind of situation is...
Yeah, but that's a much less sentence. It's a much smaller sentence.
You might be able to build it up. I don't know.
They didn't.
Spoiler, you will not be happy about this.
The papers also seem to only want to talk about the welfare case. Like, they would mention that she was suspected of kidnapping and possibly even murder, but they would just like paint this all as part of her welfare scheme. Like, oh, she was like trafficking these children to substantiate her welfare claims and stuff like that. Like, they just brought it all back to like the welfare fraud. Okay.
It's also what might just be easier to prosecute.
I think it just made a better headline, and we'll get to that in a little bit. On November 13th, 1974, Linda was indicted for theft, burglary, and bigamy. Bigamy was later dropped, unclear why. The court record named her as Connie Walker, a.k.a. Linda Bennett, a.k.a. Linda Taylor, a.k.a. Linda Jones, a.k.a. Connie Jarvis. She was either 35, 39, 40, or 47.
Inconclusive.
Despite all that she was suspected of, there was little hard evidence to prove it all, and they could only really charge her with stealing $8,000 from the government.
But yeah, I think
Jesus.
That is wild that out of all of the different things that she's done, they were only able to charge her on so little. But I think that like makes, like, if they couldn't even charge her on all of these like welfare related charges, like, I think that adding all of these other things onto it would have drawn that process out, made it more difficult. It's even more evidence they need to collect, more juries they need to convince or whatever.
It's lazy is what it is. It's lazy and it's prejudice because they just want to focus on like how she's gaming the system and stealing taxpayers' money instead of lives. In October 1975, while out on bond, awaiting her fraud trial, Linda reported to the police that two armed men broke into her apartment and stole $17,000 worth of jewelry.
What?
Honey, no. Stop. Stop.
What?
In February of 1976, she was accused of stealing an electric can opener, a color TV, a fur coat, and a three-piece polka dot pantsuit from a woman that she had previously been living with.
Very specific items.
All the items were recovered from Linda's apartment, except for the polka dot pantsuit. It was never found.
How do you miss that?
I don't know. The police went to Linda's apartment to collect these items and interview her and everything. And they also discovered that living in her place was a 7-year-old boy and a 5-year-old boy. One was black, one was white, who were both living in these like deplorable squalor conditions. And then they took the kids into protective custody. Her car was impounded as she was allegedly using that car in commission of a crime. The papers reported that the welfare queen had like lost her fancy car, but they failed to mention all the other evidence that was found in her home. This included documents such as credit cards, bills, membership cards, etc., that had the following names: Mary Stevenson, Yepes Juventino, Linda C. Jones, Linda C. Wakefield, Linda Bennett, Patricia M. Parks, Mrs. Lillian McIntosh, Mrs. Constant Howard, Jesse L. Green, Connie R. Walker, Ph.D., M.D., Dr. Linda C. Wakefield, Mrs. Linda Ray. They also found a telephone bill addressed to Sherman F. Ray, a coroner's death certificate for Frank Brown, birth certificates for children named Willie and Hosey, and two lottery tickets. Unclear why the lottery tickets were worth noting, but apparently they were. Some of these names, they believe, were victims rather than aliases. Like I said, Patricia Parks was in there.
Yeah.
Linda's attorney at the time was R. Eugene Pinchum, who was a well-known black attorney in Chicago. He claimed that prosecutors were overreaching, and he was able to stretch things out for years by winning continuation after continuation after continuation. He said, quote, "It'd be pretty sorry situation if the state tried to prosecute and send to jail everybody from the South Side that took welfare money that they didn't have coming. There'd be nowhere to put them."
So he's saying that
it's not a great defense.
Like, she was owed all of this money that she had, like, all of this money was coming to what?
He's just saying that they're overreaching and making this into a bigger deal than it is, because apparently a lot of people get welfare money that don't fully need it or something. It's not a really good argument for a lawyer to be making. Linda wasn't helping herself either, because she would show up to court in these like gaudy, colorful outfits with lots of sparkly jewelry. So that really didn't help her case. And she liked to be seen on the camera, but she would never give an interview. Another lawyer of hers tried to petition to get her psychiatrically evaluated, claiming that she was incapable of knowing whether or not she was lying, but that petition was denied.
Okay.
The trial finally started in March of 1977 after all those continuations. The jury took 7 hours to declare her guilty. While awaiting sentencing, her bond was revoked after it was determined that the address that she had given her probation officer was for a vacant lot.
Great.
She was sentenced to 2 to 6 years for theft and 1 for perjury to be served consecutively. She was briefly released while her case was going through appeals and applied for welfare at that time, claiming she needed the money for medical expenses. Girl, give it a rest.
Yeah.
She went to prison on February 16th, 1978, and was out by 1983. So, like, 5 years or less. She then changed her name to Linda Ray, because at that point, she, before she went to jail, she got married to someone named Sherman Ray. So now she's Linda Ray, and she disappeared into obscurity for a while. After she was released, a 63-year-old man named Wiltrue Lloyd, who she had some kind of relationship with, I'm not really sure what that relationship was, accidentally shot her husband, 35-year-old Sherman Ray.
Sure.
Lloyd said he was trying to shoot a snake with his shotgun.
What?
When Ray came up to him, grabbed the gun, they struggled, and it went off.
Likely story.
This sounds like the musical Chicago. We both reach for the gun.
The gun, the gun, the gun, the gun.
Oh, yes, we both reach for the gun, the gun, the gun.
The snake, the snake, the snake.
That's what it sounds like. Exactly.
It is believed that Taylor would purposely pit these men against each other just to, like, see what happened.
I've got too many men in my life. I'm just going to let them weed each other out.
Sort it out.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how natural selection takes care of this.
Lloyd confessed to what happened, though, you know, claiming it was an accident, and he was released for lack of evidence. So he didn't get, like, arrested for manslaughter or murder or anything. And Linda got Ray's life insurance payout. She and Lloyd then bought land together in Florida, and the deed was under the name Reverend Linda Ray. So now she's a reverend.
Oh boy.
There was one point that she was claiming to be a doctor too, and she even had like the sticker with like the caduceus, you know, the staff and the snakes, like on her car and stuff, and like a, I think like some kind of like parking sticker for a hospital or some shit. Like, I couldn't even get into that. There's too many things. She was a doctor, a nurse, a reverend, a babysitter. In the early 1980s, she met a wealthy elderly widow named Mildred Markham. She somehow convinced this woman that she was her long-lost daughter.
Aww.
And then she moved this woman to Florida with her.
Elder abuse.
I feel like, yeah, like she, how do you trick a woman into thinking like, oh, remember that time you had a daughter and lost her? No, well, that happened and it's me. Like, I think she'd remember giving birth to a daughter and then losing her.
Yeah, that's super gaslighty.
No, if she's elderly, she could be preying on a vulnerable person.
Markham, the widow, then married Lloyd, the like 60-something-year-old man that was kind of like Taylor's accomplice at this time. And then Taylor started sucking this woman's bank account dry. She took things from her, like furniture, jewelry, mink coats. She had a deed. She had like Markham gave her 185 acres of land from the family farm in Mississippi. So somehow she got a deed with like that land. She was verbally abusive to this woman, locked her in a room, didn't feed her enough. The elderly woman, the widow, eventually died, and it was thought to be from a stroke because she'd had a stroke before, but the medical exam later revealed that it was actually from a subdural hematoma, which is bleeding in the brain. But they assumed this was the result of a fall because old people fall all the time. There was no story of a fall, but they were like, well, she probably fell. And so Linda got the payout for multiple life insurance policies from this widow.
Goodness. She gets so many payouts from people dying.
Yeah, and this woman actually had her own children, too. Like, it's absurd.
Damn.
Lloyd died of 6 years later of natural causes at the age of 72, and his next of kin was listed as his granddaughter, Linda Lynch, which is obviously the same woman we're talking about, Linda Taylor, who was only 7 years younger than him. But he was her grandfather. I don't think that can ever possibly math out. So she got his money too. In 1994, Sandra, her Taylor's daughter, found her mother in Florida, quote, in bad shape. She had had several facelifts. She was wearing raggedy clothes and shoes that were too big for her. And she was like clearly demented and like talking nonsense. So Sandra brought her back to Chicago and she lived with Sandra from then on. She continued to decline mentally and physically from there. In 2002, she was hospitalized and eventually died of a heart attack. She was either 74 or 77 or somewhere in between. So that's the story of the welfare queen.
Wow.
Reagan, Ronald Reagan, used Linda Taylor's story in like the 70s and early 80s to kind of paint this picture of the poor African-American, especially women, as these like lazy crooks who were like leeching off the system, defrauding the government, taking money from like the honest, hardworking subtext white Americans.
Right.
He like really demonized her and made this whole thing about like welfare fraud and like how these people are doing all this and how it's like
coming for your money. Exactly. It's not fair.
Yeah, like you work hard and they're taking everything and they're just taking your money and buying Cadillacs and furs and not working and blah, 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 blah. Like he really like leaned into that and he portrayed this behavior as like a widespread problem. So this fueled support for all of his cuts to public assistance spending, which I can't help but feel that that is reminiscent of how like Trump spread fear of voter fraud and is leading to all these voter restrictions, you know.
And that's how he, you know, convinced people that the wall was necessary.
Right, like exactly.
Demonizing Latin Americans and Mexicans.
Right, it's like you pick this tiny little problem and just really focus on it and blow it up bigger than it is. And then you get, you fearmonger and then make people believe it and then they support you. But we don't have time. We don't have time. We don't have time for it. It's already really long.
Yep.
But like, I think that's also part of why a lot of the coverage, like the newspaper coverage and stuff, was focusing on all the welfare stuff because politicians were, especially Reagan, were like really pushing on that kind of that storyline.
Yeah, it's the policies that
push their own agenda
were relevant at the time.
Right. So like, that's why the all of the welfare fraud was more highlighted than her other crimes, because that was what he was pushing at the time. To get people behind his policy changes. So he started this war on welfare, but really, like, he was saying he was going to cut fraud, but really what he ended up doing is, like, cutting benefits, cutting funding, and just making it so much harder to be eligible for welfare.
Right.
In reality, this woman did, like, far, far, far worse things than defraud the welfare system.
Yeah.
So that's why our welfare system is a convoluted, underfunded system.
Yeah.
And that is the story of the welfare queen. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk rant.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
That's a lot to digest.
I cut out a lot.
Oh, God. If you love long segments and harpy rants, you should listen to Harpy Hour on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. Wherever you listen, please rate us and leave us a review.
5-star review.
Highly recommend.
5-star, highly recommend.
You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Harpy Hour Pod. And you can email us at harpyhourpodcast@gmail.com if you have shit you want to rant about.
Damn.
That's the sexy harpy.
That was a lot. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Czar of torture. Oh my God.
We're also on Patreon. So any extra money you have lying around that you're scamming from the government and you have enough furs and jewelry and you don't know what to do with it, we'll take it off your hands. We will take that money and we will process it and turn it into extra content and goodies for you. So really everybody wins. So head on over there, check out our different tiers, and please donate to us to help keep us on the air. Thanks for listening. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.